Hello and welcome once again to The Blueprint. This is Canada's Conservative Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Schmale, Member of Parliament for Halliburton, Kawartha, Lakesbrook, with new content for you every single Tuesday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. A great show lined up for you. It's something you're probably not hearing about in the mainstream media, so we ask that you like, comment, subscribe, share this program. Together, we can push back against the ever-moving Liberal agenda. And of course, if you can't watch the entire episode right now and you want to listen to it later on, download it on platforms like CastBox, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, you name it. It is out there. That's what we do. So, as I mentioned, a great show lined up for you today. We're going to talk about some Indigenous issues. And of course, the Parliamentary Budget Officer came out recently with a pretty scathing report saying that the government is spending more than ever, but their results just aren't keeping track with that spending. So, to talk about that, we have Gary Vidal. He's the Member of Parliament for Disnethe, Mississippi, Churchill River, and beautiful province of Saskatchewan. Did I get that right?
Pretty close, Jamie.
Pretty close. Okay. Yeah. He's also the critic for Crown Indigenous Relations, and right beside him is Martin Shields from Bow River in Alberta, beautiful part of the country. He is the Deputy Critic for Indigenous Services. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jamie.
All right, Gary, you're the accountant, and I promise we'll keep it light. He is an accountant, folks. Do forgive him. Now, the Parliamentary Budget Officer does talk about the government, and of course, they separated the Indigenous departments from Northern Affairs into two separate ones, Crown Indigenous Relations and Indigenous Services. But the Parliamentary Budget Officer took a peek at the books and came back with some pretty interesting results.
Yeah, they did. Jamie, we requested this report in a motion at the INAN committee because it seemed over the last 2.5 years, every time we asked one of the ministers a question about a challenge on Indigenous issues, the answer we always got, well, look how much money we spent. And so we always came back with okay, but what outcomes did we improve by spending this money? And so we asked the Parliamentary Budget Officer to do this study and do this report, and they very willingly did that for us, and then came back with the conclusion that we kind of suspected that with very significant increases in spending, we were not getting the commensurate increases in outcomes or in what they call department results indicators or performance indicators. So I believe it was a pretty scathing report that we spend more and we get less, and that's not what we want to do for Indigenous people in our country. We want to actually improve the outcomes.
So, Martin, have you seen an increased movement of the goalposts, so to speak? The departments start to fail on an issue, or the ministers start to fail on an issue, and they just push out the deadline, say, we'll complete it a few more years down the road, and we'll get to it eventually.
And the other part of that is, in this report, you will find that they make the statement that they made their budget. But what people don't understand is they've almost thrown in $4 billion more. So the government officials can say, well, within budget, people not realizing they've increased the amount by almost $4 billion. But again, it comes back to Gary's point is they keep pushing the goalposts out, they keep throwing more money in it. And what we're finding is, as we met with many witnesses in our studies, things haven't improved in many areas. So it's great for a minister to say, hey, we're within budget, but they threw in almost $4 billion more. And the Parliamentary Budget Officer, although he says they have stayed within budget in his report, and they can use that, but he also talks about the failures, the number of failures in categories for both departments. And what's interesting is it didn't matter pre-18 when they were one department, mm-hmm. to two, where you might get the excuse, well, we're having two departments, so we have to spend a lot more money and resources to staff two departments versus one. He said they weren't any better before 2018 when they had one department. So, like you say, they use different phrases to cover up what is, you're saying, moving the goalposts, not getting the results they should be.
So basically what it's doing is keeping the Ottawa's nose best approach when it comes to Indigenous communities.
Very much so. If you look at some of the specific details in the charts and the graphs.
It's okay, you can get into it. I know that makes you really happy. You can.
If you get into some of the specific details, like Martin alluded to, there's a very significant increase in spending. There's also a significant increase in what they call FTEs, or full-time equivalent employment in the departments, right? And I mean, for example, in ISC from 2018 to 2020, that number went up 51%. 2,100 people.
So that's more department officials, more bureaucrats within the department.
Exactly. Now, to be fair, the number of employees or FTEs at Crown Indigenous Relations went down part of that. So some of that shifting between the departments in the post-2018 world But if you actually drill into the numbers, there's still over 800 more employees. And if you drill further into that, I think you will find in the departmental reports and the results and those details that a significant amount of those people are actually on what they call internal services. And so if you dig into the details in one of the charts where they have their nice graphs, the one item that is the greatest percentage or number above what they planned was on internal resources within ISC. And so you're right, Ottawa knows best. We build the bureaucracy in Ottawa. That doesn't necessarily translate into improving the outcomes or the services to people on the ground out in the communities.
So if we're not getting better results on the ground, isn't it time for a different approach, a different view on things?
I would suggest so, because as Gary said, the money has gone into more staffing HR mm-hmm. here in the bureaucracy. And as we hear from many different witnesses, what they're looking for is the opportunity to use that money at the grassroots level where they know what they need to do. And I think that's the missing piece when you're talking about changing direction. Spending a lot of money here in Ottawa, hiring more people, as you say, and they talk about the HR in those reports and saying the outcomes haven't changed. So if the outcomes haven't changed, you've gone from 1 to 2, outcomes haven't changed, then you're not monitoring the right thing. Monitoring how many more people you've got and monitoring how much money you spent has nothing to do with the results at the end. And if you don't evaluate the results, then what's the point of what they're doing?
That's a very good question. So what ideas do you have, Gary?
Well, I just want to jump in on that quickly
Jamie.
The other thing, when you look at the details in the charts, one of the other items that I think jumps out is that even though the FTEs on internal services was higher than what was planned, greater than what was planned, the one line item that was significantly lower than what was planned was on a category called self-determination. And so what we've heard from this minister over the years, and I'm talking specifically Minister Miller because he was Indigenous Services and now Crown Indigenous Relations, is that their ultimate goal is to not exist at the end mm-hmm. of time, right? This is supposed to be a journey to self-determination where the department doesn't exist. Well, if you actually measure that against what we're talking about, where internal resources are going up, but the actual undercommitment relative to planning on self-determination, it doesn't paint the picture of putting the control mm-hmm. into the hands of the people at the ground level, like Martin was talking about. I think that's an additional thought on that's significant and relevant. So,
didn't Ronald Reagan say the closest thing to life on Earth was a government program?
I think
it was something like that. I probably misquoted him. But
you're absolutely right in the sense of programs, because the funding is often program funding, which means that bureaucrats have to design the program. Mm-hmm. They'll send it out, and people try to figure out how to apply for it. Then they apply for it. Bureaucrats have got to approve it, and then they got to send the money out. And by then, the year's over, and the program's starting, and the next cycle starts over again.
So summer winner, summer losers.
And it's a cyclical process with just program funding, because it's very cyclical in the sense of designing a program, applying for it, getting the money, and you got to start over again before it's done anything. And so, as you would say, to eliminate, if the goal is to remove this and move it to the grassroots level, they need to make the decisions about how that money goes rather than applying or trying to figure out which program they've designed and how do I apply to get it and how do I use the money, and then it gets that problem. So devolving it down to mm-hmm. the grassroots to making that decision, getting away from bureaucratic program funding.
Yes.
Can I jump again?
Absolutely.
To build on what Martin said, the other thing that emphasizes that point is what we saw in the most recent budget, right, where we have some opportunities to actually advance self-determination, advance independence, economic reconciliation through many of the organizations that we've met with that have put some very good ideas forward, you know, the FMB and the Roadmap Project and the FNFA and some of the work they're doing, and these are all nonpartisan organizations that were chartered under the First Nations Fiscal Management Act back in 2006, I think, in a nonpartisan support at that time, and they've offered some really relevant solutions that would lead to independence, that would lead to self-determination, and not one of those things showed up in the last budget, and I think that's a telltale sign as well.
So what does that look like? Where do you think that looks like? Where's the conversation go? The independence, the self-governing.
You mentioned it, and it's critical. It's the economic reconciliation. We have sharp Indigenous people. They're business people. They know how to get things done, but they're very frustrated with what they have to deal with and the paperwork, the red tape. If we can empower them with economic reconciliation, this not only works for them, but it works for our economy in general, because they can be a powerhouse in our economy, but we hold them back with the way it's funded and the way we distribute the money paternalistically. If we empower them, economic reconciliation, that is the answer, in my opinion.
So basically backing Ottawa off and starting to have more direct funding.
There
probably
are,
not as cyclical as the programs.
There is many, many Indigenous leaders out there that get this concept very well, and they want to be part of that solution. They want to be part of economic reconciliation. They want to be given the opportunity to participate in a prosperous economy. We heard a story this morning at the National Prayer Breakfast about a gentleman that went in and worked in his First Nation and turned it into a very successful First Nation based on capitalizing on the opportunity that was there for them. That story can be replicated across the country in so many places. We just have to actually provide them the opportunity and not hold them back to advance on those initiatives that they know very well, the initiatives they need to advance on to be successful.
And relatively speaking, they have a lot of communities, whether it be First Nations, Métis, Inuit, a lot of their population is young, with people that want to enter the workforce. And that's a key part when we talk about labor shortages all over the country, no matter where you're from. That's a group that has kind of been left out of the conversation, in my opinion.
Their age, as you would know in the sense in the studies, the average age of Indigenous is significantly lower in the population.
Mm-hmm.
The other part that people don't understand, they have an entrepreneurial history,
yep,
in the sense of developing,
that's right,
trading. Their societies were based on the cultures of making things and trading. They understand that concept, but we have kept them from doing it. We need to release that power back, because innately they want to do this. This is something that makes sense to them. But if we keep them in this paternalistic mechanism of funding, it deteriorates into how many people do we have Indigenous in our prison system? That's wrong. We need to unleash the economic spirit they have. They understand it. They just need the opportunities.
And when you say we, it's been 150 years of successive governments that have created,
yes,
this model and just kept the same thing going with the little tweaks here and there.
Right. Exactly right. Thank you for saying that.
I think one a part of that journey as well, and I'll share a story from my own riding in Northern Saskatchewan, is the, you know, the economic reconciliation comes with the opportunity to make equity investments in good projects, whether it's natural resources, I mean, oil and gas, mining, forestry, their agriculture. There's so many opportunities that we're seeing for First Nations people or other Indigenous people across the country. In my own riding, I spent almost 2 years trying to find a mechanism for a local initiative to invest in a forest industry project. And that forest industry project is going to be very successful. And the partners on the project very much wanted to ensure that there was a more than 50% Indigenous ownership. And so they were working towards that. But we went through every hoop and jumped through every, you know, challenge that the government put before us to try to find that equity investment,
yeah,
and the opportunity, which would have got paid back so quickly. And in the end, it never happened. Now, it is going to happen, but it's going to happen through a provincial government instead of through the federal government. So fortunately, the project's going to go ahead.
Right.
But the success of that was going to be years and years and years of future dividends to invest,
right,
back into the social issues in their communities, right? I think it was like 750 jobs and 12 First Nations included in this project. And millions of dollars of dividends over the years that were going to be invested back into these communities, right?
Well, I think that's an ongoing problem with most government programs, and Martin alluded to it as well as you just did. It's you know, getting that square peg into the round hole, trying to figure out, okay, how do I tweak my idea, which I think is amazing, into what the bureaucrats and the government and the politicians think is a good idea, and can I make it work? And if you can't, then you're at a bit of a disadvantage almost.
And it's interesting because we met last week with a very successful Indigenous on a nation in his business. And he talked about his business. He's got a store, but he has a huge embroidering business in the store. I mean, there are many machines that they produce stuff for lots of people. He also has a couple of white bison there, which is attraction. But we asked him about his social media platforms, and he says, I don't use them. He says, I use the Moccasin Telegraph. He says, people beat the path to my doorway. I don't need social media. And it was really interesting how successful he's been using the traditional methods of communication. And people find him. They find the store on this indigenous nation in my riding. And he is very successful. And he understands entrepreneurial. But it's interesting that he doesn't use social media. He uses indigenous communication of what Moccasin Telegraph. And that's how he described it. And he says, people are beating the pathways to his door.
Well, I always give the guests the last word. We are pretty much out of time. So if, Gary, you want to kick it off, whatever you want, the floor is yours.
You know, I would probably just add a little pitch for some of the stuff we had in our platform in the last election. A couple of examples of things. We had a significant component in there about economic development on a regional basis and investing in capacity and regionalizing some of the opportunity to promote economic development in communities, in regions. And then the second thing that was very significant in my mind was the Canadian Indigenous Opportunities Corp that we proposed, which was going to be a loan or a guaranteed loan kind of mechanism that would allow these entrepreneurs to make equity investments in successful businesses. And I think that is a huge part of what we have to do if we're going to be successful going forward and gain that independence, the economic reconciliation, and ultimately self-determination.
And it almost reduces the barriers between the indigenous and non-indigenous communities, right? We meld some of that. Martin?
No, I thank you for the opportunity. Gary, you understand it well. A lot of the information, you can go through the numbers, but it comes down to we have a strong population in our country that needs to be the people making decisions about what works for them, not the bureaucracy. We've got to change that.
I couldn't agree more. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for that conversation. There are many more questions, but unfortunately, we only have so much time.
We'll leave the fax machines issues to another day.
There we will. Talk about fax machines. And that is something, believe it or not, is still being used to communicate with the government in some indigenous communities. And I kid you not, they have not got around to email yet. So thank you very much for your time. 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Please like, comment, subscribe, share this program. Before I go, I want to thank and Gary Vidal from the riding of...
Does Nothing Mississippi Churchill River.
I think I was pretty
You're
close.
You're pretty close, yeah. You
critic
did
for Crown Indigenous Relations. Martin Shields from Bow River. He has a nice, easy one to pronounce. Also the deputy critic for Indigenous Services. We appreciate your time. And remember, if you didn't catch it all, download it. Platforms like CastBox, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, you name it. It is out there. We will see you next week. Remember, low taxes, less government, more freedom. That's the Blueprint.